very soon, as we announced we will be in the book of Acts. Prior to that study, though, we do want to spend a little time looking at Bible authority. And where we are in the book of Exodus, I decided I might camp out a little bit, figuratively speaking, and talk about Bible interpretation on Sunday night for a few Sunday nights. So I think Bible authority, Bible interpretation, and the Acts study may just be a nice way to bring a lot of things together. If you were not in last week's class, we introduced a word that's a long word. It's a word that we don't often use, but it's the word hermeneutics. Anybody remember what hermeneutics means?
Study.
Okay, the study, interpretation, the science of interpretation, and we do that in a lot of different ways. We talked about that from a biblical standpoint, from a secular standpoint, and one of the points that we made was that as we deal with life, as we deal with spiritual things, we find authority really in three different ways. Sometimes we have a direct command. There's a Bible command, do this, go, come, those kinds of things. In addition to commands, we also find that we have examples, and then we also find that we have inference. Some people would refer to that as necessary inference. So we want to complete that study. We talked about the fact that when we talk about book, chapter, and verse preaching, we're looking at information which ties in with commands, examples, and inference. Brian made the point about midway through last week's class that if you reject this hermeneutic, if you reject the idea of interpreting the Bible, interpreting life, going through life without examples, commands, and inferences, where are you getting your authority from? For example, you're driving along. Are we not guided by commands, examples, and inference?
Sure.
Absolutely. What's the command?
Well, it's the speed limit.
All right. The speed limit says don't go beyond this, or you come up to the stop sign, it says stop. Now, there's not a police officer out there with a stick, but that is a lawful command. You're being directed. Or if there's an officer out in the street that says stop even though the light is green, or vice versa, you have commands. Do we not, when we drive, follow examples? You see some guy veering off the road up there. Well, you think that's unusual until you get up there and then you find the road ahead of you is caved in. Well, you know, you go another 50 feet and you're going to be in the hole. So you follow the lead. You follow the example. And we also use inference. You come up to, and I may use this one twice today, but you come up to a green stoplight and you see some people, as far as cross traffic, they're not stopping. Well, the light's green. You're the only one headed this way. Don't you infer something? You infer, I need to stop, otherwise I'm going to get clipped. So we use these items when it comes to driving. We use them when it comes to dealing with doctors. Very, very common. And if you reject those things, and that's where many are as a society, not only religiously, but in general behavior sometimes, it just begins to collapse all around you, and you just can't have a world where people reject authority. Sherman, did you have a thought? Okay. I thought somebody started to raise a hand. Okay. Let's go back and kind of pick up where I wanted to finish out last week. Because of that, you would find some people today, they recognize the problem, that if you do not have those kinds of things in place, that everything just ceases to function. So, and this is really where we are as a society. They would say, well, you know, you're so strict on that stuff. Where are we? What's my mindset? The average guy out there in the street. Most people would not say we can't completely reject them, so what do? We have them to just a certain... Okay. There's a certain degree. When it comes to Christianity, you know, you want to be involved with all that specific stuff. We reject that you have to kind of book, chapter, and verse it. We just kind of want this general summation of Christianity. And as long as you're sort of in the mainstream, are we going to accept you? You're good. So, you know, you believe in Jesus, well, we've got that in common, and you worship on Sunday, and that's good, and you believe in faith, and you have those main things, but we're not going to get real specific with the other things. So that's really where we are as a society. Well, when you begin to have those disagreements with people over, you know, do we need to follow the Bible, exams, commands, and inference, are you going to find, do you think, that there are going to be some individuals who come up with some different conclusions? Yeah. Anybody ever find a congregation where they thought that they couldn't have a located preacher? It's called a mutual edification congregation. All the men have to speak. They can't hire a preacher. All right? All right. They were looking at the Bible, and as they were concerned about commands, examples, inference, those kinds of things. Anybody ever find a congregation that's a one-cup church? Everybody's got to drink from the same cup. Okay, there again, it goes back. They were looking at commands, examples, and inference. They were concerned about that. They drew a conclusion that some others have not. So every congregation, as we look at the New Testament, is an autonomous congregation, but you will find differences. And the differences that you find go back to that as far as how people have approached the commands, the examples, and the inferences. And that's why I say when you look at the Bible, this is something that's very, very helpful. Then too, yeah.
When we went to Connecticut in April and visited Gary and Tequila, and we went to worship with them, they don't pass the collection plate. They leave it up front, and all the members got up afterwards and put their collection in. And I'd never seen that before.
Yeah. You might find that you have, too, speaking of money, you might find that there would be some people that would look at 1 Corinthians 16, the great collection, and they would keep their money at home. I don't think that is the right way to look at the passage, but there are some people who say, well, that's the example that we have there. You don't contribute it every Sunday. You lay by in store literally at home, and that's how they understand that. So, you know, as a local congregation, you're going to have to kind of sort that out. But you do have people that will take some information from the Bible, and you may have them, in this case, applying it in this particular way, applying that in another way. And it's just like society. You have to reason through those kinds of things. So we'll cover some of that, as I said, on Sunday night as far as Bible interpretation. But you do find if you visit some places, and we have had some members that have pretty well crisscrossed the country, you do begin to find, well, that's a practice that's different than what we have at home. So people sometimes would just say that's different. Sometimes they would look at that as a doctrinal matter. But you do want to, you know, try to sort through those. Be respectful of others if they have some different views. And, you know, just try to work that out the best you can.
I don't see anything wrong.
No.
But I just have never seen it before.
Yeah. Well, you could have in a congregation.
Have you seen it before?
No. You could have in a congregation, everybody comes up and they, you know, all march by the communion table and everybody grabs a glass, which, you know, that would almost seem foreign to us. It's time to. But, you know, if it's an orderly process, well, that's what we have as far as the command. You know, it's to be done decently and in order when it comes to matters related to worship. So if that part of the command were observed, then a congregation would have leeway. So
Catholics do it that
yes,
way.
Yes, yeah. We can get outside our comfort zone. Sometimes we just become, it's like any other change. At work, we've been doing something for 10 years. It's always this way. And a directive comes down. We're going to change things. Oh, wow. And it's like the earth has just been turned upside down. Well, that's not literally true, but it's very different for us. Glenda?
Isn't it true that most groups that do things like that are so diligent about it that they look at others and like us and say they wouldn't fellowship us because, like the one covers?
You will find some divisions. For example, if you have a congregation, let's say that we've got some visitors from State X and they are of the mindset that either you can't have a Bible class, or if you have a Bible class, it has to be a group Bible class. There are actually some brethren who would hold to those views. And they come in here at 9, and they realize maybe they're okay with a Bible class, but they're not okay with a split class. And they come into our assembly, and they have kids. And we say, well, we have Bible classes for the children. Well, to them, I mean, that's heresy, for the lack of a better word. And they may not see it quite that strongly, but some indeed may. And they may say, we just can't take that, and we've got to, you know, either come back at 10, or we're going to worship by ourselves, or we're going to try to find another congregation in our area. So there again, you know, it gets down to you want to look at the issue, see what you're talking about, try to determine whether it's not, it's in a doctrinal area. And like I say, you know, sometimes you're just going to have to have people come along and you know, work that out to the best of their ability. But it all goes back to hermeneutics. How are you understanding the text? Examples, commands, and inferences. So you do have sometimes there are cases where you do need to make some allowances and try to do that. Okay, it's Judy's eye. I was wondering what was flashing there. Okay, things have become a little more complicated. I'm going to mention this earlier or later in the lesson as well. You know, you go back to the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and I think you had a lot of preaching, you know, dancing, drinking, gambling. Those are the sins that you want to avoid. Well, nothing wrong with those kinds of issues. But now, don't we have some extra items on the plate as far as things that people are facing? We've still got the dancing, drinking, and gambling. But people are now asking about euthanasia. People are now asking questions about, you know, if we are an infertile couple, how can we go ahead and have a baby? Well, when we're talking about the dancing, drinking, and gambling, where do we need to go? The Bible, okay? And are you going to be able to just pull out four or five verses that talk about gambling? You're probably not going to do too well. So how are you going to have to go, and what are you going to have to do to use to talk about those things as far as we know this right tool? But how are you going to get information about gambling? You're going to have to go back to commands, examples, and likely inference. You know, for example, when it says the golden rule, treat people like you want to be treated. Who wants to be my illustration? Okay. All right. Sherman and I decide to play cards, and I'm thinking, hey, I need some money this month. I'm a little short. And Sherman, he's got a wife that works, and they make really good money. I'm just laying that out for the illustration. That sounds good. So I think, I know he's not really good at cards, so I'm going to go over there, and I'll be honest in the game, but I'm going to go over there and win $500 from him. That'll make my car payment. Now, might that work?
Yes.
That might work. And the $500 probably isn't going to hurt him. But you know, what's the golden rule say? Treat people like you want to be treated. Now, if Sherman knew what I was up to, do you think he would appreciate that?
No.
I don't think so. And do you think I would want to be treated in that way by him?
No.
Probably not. So even though the golden rule, Matthew 7, says nothing about gambling, we can take that information and we can infer from it when we use that kind of scenario that is not proper behavior. That's inconsistent with the Word of God. Now, here's where things get a little sticky. Somebody says, well, yeah, I understand that, but what do I want? To condemn gambling. I really want the thou shall not gamble. That's what everybody wants, because that's kind of the, in their mind, the absolute proof text. Let's not have to reason through it. Let's just go ahead and get that passage. Well, that would be nice if we had that verse. But when you start talking about things like euthanasia, you know, you could go back to Exodus and, you know, try to, you know, deal with some things as far as how people were being put to death, the babies and so forth. Or Jesus, those kinds of things. But those were not older folks. Those were younger folks. So again, you're having to use these things from Scripture and reason. Sherman?
I was going to say, a while back, a long time ago, I kind of talked about the golden rule that in inference, God really meant like the patent rule, do it to others as they want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes, like if I like green bean casserole and I'm going to fix it for everybody, not everybody likes it, and I'm not really treating the way they want.
Yes. Yes. So you have those things there, and they can be applied in those kinds of ways, and we can see it if we're simply willing to be open enough to recognize it. Ray, did you have a hand? Or Doug?
One of those, and that is love your neighbor yourself.
Right.
That's, love your neighbor, you wouldn't do that to them.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, I would have to explain as far as the gambling go. For you to win, a bunch of people have to lose, mm-hmm. So you're taking from what may have been something that was needed for them to do it. Even though they chose to do it on their own, you still are part of that.
Yeah.
So defrauding somebody.
Yeah. And in today's world, a lot of people, they look at the Bible and say, if you can show it to me in black and white. And their definition of black and white, again, is the thou shall not do this. Well, people need to be taught, or at least reminded, if they already know, that when you're dealing with the Bible, not everything is going to fall into the area of a command. And if that's true, when you're dealing with something that you're drawing from inference, the inference is just as binding as the command, or the example is just as binding as the inference or the command. So it does become a little more complicated. Anybody else? All right, let's look at a couple passages to tie these things together. Acts chapter 24, from that verse, we'll look at just the first part of the passage, and then we'll also pick up with 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 3. Acts 17, you'll have a minute to get there, Sherman, and then we'll also, after that, see what we have in 2 Peter chapter 1, the first chapter, verse 3. Who wants responsibility for that one? Jeff. Okay. Sherman, let's start with Acts chapter 17, verse 24.
God, who made the world and everything in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands.
Hmm. Was that 1724? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I had 24 in my notes. Yeah, let's see. Well. Oh, okay. I know the connection here. Where we were as far as class wasn't quite where I was as far as the notes. So that was the thing. Let's look at that one more time. The God that made the world and all things therein. Okay. I was thinking in terms of inference. How can you infer that God made the world? I mean, we weren't back there. We don't have any example as far as we can go out there and, you know, God's doing this and we can see it taking place. There were no Polaroids. So how can we infer that God made the world? What?
Genesis.
Well, no. Remember what inference is. We have information. Yeah, we have information. And from those facts, from that information, from the details, we infer, we draw a conclusion. So how... What do we have that would allow us to infer that God created the world? Or something, someone created the world?
It took so long for man just to get to the moon. How in the world would they have created it?
Yeah.
So there has to be a God.
Sure. Even if you take billions and billions of years times billions and billions of years times billions and billions of years, and you come out with this astronomical figure, you know, still, do you really believe that everything just somehow...
appeared?
Yeah. You know, that nothing came from, or something came from nothing? So again, inference allows you to conclude that there has to be something from which something comes. You just don't get, I mean, you hold your hand out and somebody expects $1 million to just appear in it. Well, nobody believes that, because we're able to infer that if you're not working with something, if there is no source material, you're not going to come up. There's not going to be any resulting activity or any resulting product. So yes, inference would be along that line. Anybody else?
Nature itself.
All right, the design. When you start, for example, you think about bugs, that are distasteful to birds. You know, evolution, the claims are that, well, that just happened, and lo and behold, everything worked out great. Or the fish that swim back to their native place of birth, or the birds, how they're able to migrate without any kind of training. You know, the instinct that people talk about, those kinds of things. It's just amazing. And you look at those items, and you infer. I mean, nobody would look at a plant, a factory, and say, well, lo and behold, that just sprung up one day. All the machines were there and everything was painted so nicely, and all the machines, if they're put to use and whatnot, you have an automobile, you have an RV at the end of the line. And it's all just one great happenstance. People would look at that and think, you're an absolute idiot. You know, how can you possibly believe that? Well, if that's true for the factory, what about a world and universe? So Paul was able to say that, and he's using inference as he's talking to these folks. Okay, 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 3.
According as his divine power hath given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness, through the knowledge of him that hath called us to glory and virtue.
Okay, 2 points here. Peter says God has given us how many things? All things. And he says these all things pertain to both life and godliness. If we're dealing then with something in life, let's take the subject of reincarnation, for example. We're talking with somebody about that topic. Would the Bible be able to help us with the things we need when it comes to that? Yes, it would. All things related to life and godliness. Now, the person that we're talking to, if he or she or they don't believe the Bible, what may not be the best approach? Well, what's the Bible say about death? Let's hold off. Let's hold off for that for a second. What's the Bible say about death? It is appointed unto man once to die, and then you come back 10,000 times. No. It's appointed unto man once to die, and then what happens?
Judgment.
You're not coming back. You get one shot at life, and that's it. All right, now if I'm talking to you, and you believe in reincarnation, and I cite that verse, Hebrews 9:27, how effective is that going to be to you? It's not going to have any meaning. I mean, that's your book. That's your holy book. But that's not what I believe in. So you could go and start studying Bible evidences, those kinds of things. You know, but might you reason in some other way?
Yeah, where's the last people that you've seen die and come back? You say, well, if that's true, nothing else has done it to this point. What's the point, or where's the point in time that this starts happening? And it's the same with evolution. When does all this start happening? You say, we came from apes, how come it's not happening?
You're backtracking information. you know, we talk, you lose something. And you, what did we do to find the car keys, the billfold, the purse? All right, we retrace our steps. We go back. And that's exactly what we're doing with reincarnation. Okay, what do you believe? And then we're going to walk it back step by step. You know, here you got two bugs. They're mating. Do you believe that you're going to be produced from that? What's being produced from that? Well, another bug. Well, now you just told me that you believe that another bug is being produced. Not someone who used to be a human being or someone. So, you know, you start taking them through the process and you're using inference. Well, isn't there a sense in which you're also using the Bible? The Bible teaches us about commands, examples, and inferences. So you have those kinds of things, plus the example that we have here in Acts chapter 17 about Paul's reasoning. There's a college professor, famous preacher. That's not his primary role, but he's a law professor, a member of the church, and read from him not too long ago that when he has a new class of students, and we'll just throw this out here, not that I want you to give me your answer, but we'll see if he can give me the answers that the students give him. In one of his law classes, he says, "What's morality?" Now, I would think that's an important question for people who want to become lawyers. I'm assuming that some of the lawyers would be involved with criminal defense, or they're maybe going to be a prosecutor. I mean, if you're writing wills, that's probably not going to matter too much. But you're in a law class. Other people are answering this question. What's morality? What kinds of answers do you think he's getting? What is morality? What's right and wrong, if we really want to make it simple?
It's whatever you think.
All right. Whatever works for you, whatever you think, whatever the majority may believe. That would be one of the common answers. What else?
Don't harm anybody.
Okay. It's kind of negative morality. Just, you know, be good and don't injure someone else, or at least don't injure someone intentionally. Trace? All right. That might be another. Or you might have a variation of that depending on who the student is and their background. They might say whatever the political powers deem it to be. So if you have a dictator that comes into power and the dictator says, here are the laws, A, B, C, D, E, well, then those would be morally right because that is the law of the land. What else do you think they might hear? What about what works? Isn't that often how it works in society? What's the best way to get through the day? What's the best way to make it through the job? Or what's the best way to convince? Not what's right, but what works. So those are a lot of the common answers that he gets. Then, after the professor gets the kids on the hook, what was the Holocaust? Okay, that's true. Could we narrow that down a little bit? All right. You know, you've probably got 6 million Jews that were slaughtered, and that's such a big event in history that a lot of people are still familiar with it, or you can lay it out as we did. So the law professor has heard all these answers. What's morality? Well, you know, whatever is politically correct, whatever the government can do, whatever you feel like, and says, was the Holocaust wrong? And the class just falls silent. You can't come out and say that the Holocaust was wrong. I mean, you've got a regime in power. They're saying this is right. So if your answer is whatever is politically correct, well, okay, then that had to be right. That's the inference you have to draw. Or if you have some other views, for example, you know, whatever works well, that apparently worked reasonably well for Hitler's regime. But this professor, not too long ago, said there was actually a student who was able to give the answer, and it was kind of a two-part answer, either I don't know or it was right. Now, can you imagine living in a society where you have a majority of people thinking that? Slaughtering 6 million people. Either it's not wrong or it was even right. But that's where people go when they reject God's authority and they're not willing to live by the principles that we're talking about today. So when we talk about hermeneutics, the science of Bible interpretation, commands, examples, and inference, we by and large have in the religious world and in sometimes even in the church some people who reject this way of interpreting things, and we're paying the consequences for that. Let's pick up two other references. We'll see if there's some things that you want to add or ask as well. 1 John 4:1 and 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 21. Steve, will you take the first one? 1 John chapter 4, verse 1. So based on that passage, we get the impression that this may have even been a problem in John's day, first century times. 1 Thessalonians 5:21, we'll also look at that too. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 21. All right, Bonnie, we'll take that after a bit. 1 John 4, 1, Steve.
Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world.
All right. Did John recognize that there were a lot of different ideas, many different philosophies in his day and time?
Yes.
Yeah, he says there's a bunch of them. So if you're not going to get hoodwinked, if you're going to make sure that you really understand what you need to know, what do you need to do? You need to prove, try, test, check out, verify, ensure that you're getting the right information and not somehow misled. Paul, another popular New Testament writer, worded it this way. Bonnie, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 21.
Prove all things, hold fast that which is good.
Okay, so here you have a little different spin on it. Still check things out, but he says when you find things that are good, when you find things that are right, when you find things that have checked out, do what with those? Hold on to them. Well, do we not have an implication here, or can't we infer something? You've got 1,000 things. You've checked them all out. Out of the 1,000 things, you find 10 that have proven to be true. So based on 1 Thessalonians 5:21, what would you do with those 10 things? Hold them. These are going to be part of my belief system. These are items by which I'm going to live my life. All right, so if we've got 1,000 that we're working with, we hold on to 10. How many extra do we have?
990 aren't good.
Okay, we're agreed on the math. Good. 990. So if we're holding 10 and we've got 990 extra, we would infer that we do what with an extra 990? All right, we discard them. We don't want those items as far as our belief system. So there again, as we're reading through the Bible, Scripture is implying something, and we're taking that data, we're taking the facts, the premises, the information, and we're inferring, we're drawing conclusions from it. Now, what if we didn't have a command that said, okay, discard the old stuff, discard the bad stuff that you've proven to be false? We've only got the inference, let's say. I mean, I think we've got examples, but would that then be as binding as a command? Evil. So, right, you could take that, I guess, as maybe an example of a command. But let's just say that we don't have that for the sake of illustration. Would that inference that we've drawn be as binding as a command?
Yes.
Absolutely. So on at least some level, we don't have a problem. Others typically don't have a problem with that, but we just need to make sure that we have those pieces together. When we look at society, though, and even in the church, there have been congregations and in the religious world up until about 250 years ago, there were many religious groups that didn't use instrumental music in worship. It just wasn't used. But people came along and decided, well, this is not something that we're using, so let's have it. What were some of the reasons, do you think, that people gave to have it a couple hundred years ago? All right, we like it. We've heard it over here. Let's bring it into the religious service. So we enjoy it. What else? All right, we're going to attract people. The singing will be so much better. They've got it across the way, and people are just going in droves. So let's bring that in. And that's going to help our singing. It's going to help our attendance. What else?
I can't carry tunes, so it turns up my
voice. All right, I don't sing well, so that's going to help mask my poor singing. There's still at least one more reason out there. Okay, there's that. Is there one more? The Bible doesn't specifically forbid it. People make that argument. Well, does the Bible specifically prohibit a husband from killing his wife? Thou shalt not kill thy wife. Is it in there? I've never read that. But is that forbidden? Well, yeah. How's it forbidden? Well, okay, you could use that. But thou shalt love thy wife. Well, okay, that too. But if you love your wife, then I think you can infer from that that you're not going to grab the meat cleaver and do what? Chop her up and kill her. Now, that's kind of a crude illustration, but I mean, it makes the point that we're able to infer information from a passage. So it goes back to the golden rule, the gambling illustration. But a lot of people, they just jettison that kind of thinking.
And Brad, so many people just cannot separate the old and the new.
Yes, that is another
one.
They
just keep going back. And you know, that's where all the mention is. on instrumental music is in the old, but not in the new. But so many people, it's mind-boggling to me how they can just jump back there.
Yeah, I'll deal with some of that on Sunday nights as far as Bible interpretation, but people do those things as well, and it just starts them off on the wrong foot, and you just have sort of a sequence of errors that lead people to left field. So it's like doing anything else, you know, to understand the Bible, to interpret the Bible properly, there are some certain steps or some basic things to be done. It's almost like following the instructions on a recipe. You can't start at the back, or you can't just start flipping things around and expect to have a good product. It just doesn't work, or steps at work.
When you read 1 John 4, the verse after that, this is what a lot of people have a problem with. As long as they believe in Jesus, I'm fine. Because he talks about that. When I read it, it says, we know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ is in the flesh is of God. Every spirit that confesses not, then he comes to the flesh, is not of God. And this is how we know they are Antichrist. Well, they all believe, they think they believe in Jesus. So how they convince them with... I mean, we're using an inference here that, and we got to go back to that time and use common sense. And I think it's the same thing you talk with the lawyer when they're trying to figure out what had happened and whatever they're trying to decipher there. They have to use all these things, mostly inference.
Yeah.
They got to figure out, okay, well, if he was here, then how did it happen over here? And you're trying to tie him over here. Mm-hmm. So they use common sense and they use logic. But when it comes to the Bible, logic is thrown out.
Yeah.
It's totally...
It is, and it's absolutely amazing. But if you have, for example, a police officer, and that was what came to mind as you were giving your example, you have a police officer come out, and he's going to evaluate a wreck. Well, there's really no command involved. But is he not going to maybe draw for an example? Oh, last week I had this wreck. Well, he's got some examples to draw from. And more than likely is that police officer not going to base his report on some inference. He's going to draw information from the driver, maybe from the passenger, from others that were bystanders, maybe other vehicles involved with the collision. And once he gets all that data, he's going to take that and he's going to draw. So we would, if he just came up and said, well, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, you're guilty and you're not. Now, if you were in that wreck, how would you feel? Well, if you were the right eeny or the right moe, I guess you might feel all right, if you were the one that should have been faulted and the cop just made that random choice and you ended up in the veteran of the stick, well, again, that may not work out too badly for you. But, we don't want decisions like that. We want people to think through it, to use the common sense, the reasoning, those kinds of things. But when it comes to religion, the devil has really clouded the minds of people where it's just you throw all that out. And today, it's been not only tossed out, but it's actually been replaced. If you look at some of the demonstrations that have taken place in our world, our society, our nation recently, what's the emphasis on? We want justice, right? Haven't we heard those kinds of calls? Or as you look at what people are saying, they would say, we want equality for others. Are we opposed to justice and equality? Absolutely not. But how can you have justice and equality if they're not coming from the source that offers those things? Where does justice come from? God. Where does equality come from? God. Remember, all people made in the image of God. If you want to give a reason, if you want to have a basis for all people being equal, it's in the fact that God has created us. But if you reject God, you reject his word, you reject his authority, what basis do you have for equality? Where are you going to get it? Who's going to decide what's just? Who's going to decide what's equal? Are you going to leave it to the courts? Where are they going to get the basis for justice and equality? It goes back to what Sherman was saying earlier. It's that negative righteousness. I'm going to use a double negative there. Avoid doing bad things to people. And as long as you do that, talk about that a little bit more in today's sermon as far as MTD. But as long as you kind of observe these basic principles, you're just, you're equal, and everybody's just great. And the Bible says that's simply not true. So it's a very difficult thing as we deal with it. Now, you may, if you talk to people about Bible authority, you may have somebody, anybody ever hear John Locke? I'll introduce it that way. John Locke? Okay. This goes back a few centuries. Back in the 17th century, if you go back and you see what was taking place, it was the time, it was the era of enlightenment. People were beginning to reason and think to do the very things that we talked about. And you will find some, especially when it comes to religious thought, that says, well, that was the age of enlightenment, and we've moved past that now. Now we're into the justice and the equality and kind of whatever you think is best, and forget about that. Well, it goes back long before light, and we, I think, can show that repeatedly as we look at the Bible. A couple of the quick points here. We've got about 7 minutes left, and I do want to finish this out today. And I'll talk about this tonight as well. So, like I say, tonight's class, in some ways, finishes out what we started last week, also relates to both lessons today. Common sense is a part of Bible interpretation. I think for some people that shocks them, they just don't think about that, but common sense has a big part to play when it comes to interpretation. And let's think about it from a couple of different perspectives. Are commands easy to identify? Yeah, I mean, you know, go, stay, do this, or pick this up, or put that down. We typically don't have very much difficulty with commands. And I think when people deal with the Bible, that's why they may elevate commands above other things, because it's so easy. I mean, the Bible says, but even with commands, there can be some difficulty. Do you think there's some commands in the Bible that are not for us today? No, I'm talking about new, so thanks for that question. We'll clarify that. Do you think there are some New Testament commands? Okay, I'm just going to let you talk for a little bit. So I'll just, she said meditation. What else? You think there are some commands in the New Testament that are not for us today?
Fasting.
Okay.
Feet washing.
Okay.
Tithing.
Well, I don't think you're going to find tithing in the New Testament, are you? Okay.
Holy kiss.
Okay.
What are the holy and holy commands?
I'm just letting you talk for a couple minutes. Get you on the hook like that law professor.
Raising the holy hands.
Okay.
Greet you with a holy kiss.
Well, let me offer you another one. Go into this city. Is that a command? Go into this city and stay for X number of days. Go into Jerusalem. Stay on the mountaintop. Are those commands?
Yes.
Absolutely. Are they for us today?
No.
I mean, we're not commanded to go. We may, you know, die without going into Jerusalem, and that's not going to send us to hell. We don't have to go to Jerusalem to be in heaven. So there are most certainly, and all the other things could be talked about, but I just wanted to give you something that was really fundamental to show that there are commands in the Bible that we simply are not under today. Well, that creates a little bit of a challenge, doesn't it? So, and we're going to see this as we go through the book of Acts and point this out, and like I say, hopefully have a really fascinating class looking at it from this additional perspective, the textual aspect plus the commands, inferences, and examples. That might put a new spin on our Bible study. We start looking, well, we've got a command here, but that doesn't relate to us. So some are obviously not for us today. Some clearly are for us today. Do you think that we might have some commands in the middle where we have to look at that and say, well, okay. And that would take us back to what we're just talking about. Greet one another with a holy kiss. Well, that sounds like a directive. That sounds like a command. But that command, is that for us today? The foot washing. You know, what I've done to you, do to one another. Well, okay, that's a command. Would that apply to us today? And was Jesus there in John chapter 15 talking about actually washing feet, or was the command something else? So as you deal with those matters, you're having to delve into it, whether in a Bible class, a sermon, or individually, and see exactly what's under consideration. So commands are not always quite as simple to grasp. And we see that in the religious world, do we not? We don't wash feet, but we might find another group across town that does. We've actually had people come here and say, well, we wash feet, you don't. Why? Well, it goes back to a proper understanding of commands, examples, and inference. All right, let's talk about the second item. Not only do we have to deal with commands in the kinds of ways that we describe, what about examples? Are there some examples that we clearly would want to follow today? New Testament.
Giving.
All right. And that could be in different ways. I mean, you know, somebody might say, we're talking about money. Well, that could be. But people gave her their time. You think about Dorcas. She was someone who was willing to give in the sense of she's providing clothes to others, helping in that kind of way. Would you find, as we think about examples, some examples which are not binding or not necessarily binding? What did Paul tell that young Timothy do? Get some what? For your stomach.
Wine.
wine. All right, is that an example? Okay. Would we say that that's an example for everybody? You know, we all need to go out and get a jug of wine, make sure it takes care of our tummy. Well, we've got there an example, but we might want to go back and look at what Timothy had to work with as far as medical care and some other things in first century culture. So, like commands, you're having to take that example, and some people would describe it as an approved example. By that, they mean, is this an example? Do you not have some other examples that we would not want to follow? All right, that's the first one that sprang to my mind, too. I mean, he goes out and he hangs himself. That's an example, is it not? It is. But is it an approved an example? Is it an example that we should say, well, this is something that we're to follow today? Now, somebody might say, well, that common sense. Well, that's what we talked about earlier. We need to use a little common sense when it comes to Scripture.
Peter would be another
one. Yes.
Yeah. He denied Christ. He wouldn't want to do that.
Yes, that's great. That's another. That's probably the number two example that we could give. So, do you want to go out and deny Christ? Well, obviously not. The Corinthians were involved with all kinds of sins. They were suing one another, 1 Corinthians chapter 6. So, should we decide that we're going to sue one another? Well, again, that's not a positive example. And that one is explained. Paul makes it clear that that was not good. So, when we talk about examples, we have to use some common sense. Glenda?
I was going to say Pilate. Yeah. And, you know, he was afraid more of, he really wanted to release Jesus.
Yeah. Now, when we read through that stuff, I'm not sure, you don't know what's in the mind of everybody, but I'm not sure that most people, as they read through the Bible, whether it is in a class or whether it's on their own, that they're necessarily thinking, well, look, this is a command. And they think through it in that way. Or this is an example. And is this an example that I need to follow? But it will give you a brand new perspective on studying the Bible if you start looking at it in this way. And we, like I say, talk about these things sometimes, but we also want to look at it from the standpoint of class. All right, let's talk about inference for a little bit. Here again, we're going to go back to common sense. We'll appeal in some respects to what Bonnie said as well as far as a collection. Here you have a congregation, and they're meeting on Sunday. We have an example of that and those kinds of things. And let's say that in the Bible, we, with that congregation that we're reading about, it's time for the collection and they pass a hat. Would we need to follow that exact example today? Okay, could we?
Yes.
Yes. How do we know, or how would we determine that the hat is an optional matter and not a binding matter? Okay. It gets a little more complicated then, doesn't it? Because here we have some information and we're having to look at that and process that. And you're going detail by detail. They were meeting on Sunday. So do we follow that example or not? They were meeting in this particular place. I don't need a yes or no, but thank you for being responsive. They were meeting in this particular place. They were meeting at this particular time. They were taking up funds in this particular way. We want to do what's right. But when we have all that information, how do we determine which parts are binding for us today, which parts are not? Well, if we had just four or five things, you know, we might have universal agreement. But there are a lot of things in the Bible where, as you look at that, you're probably not going to have everybody coming out to the same conclusion. Right? All right, second example. You have Christians coming together, and this is to some degree what you have at Corinth. But you have Christians coming together, and the Bible says the ladies had nylon scarves on their head. Now, again, it doesn't say that, but let's think through that for a second. So you get through all of the meeting. Now you've got a question about scarves, don't you? Was that a local custom, or is that something for us today? Well, let's say, for example, that we conclude as a congregation that the scarves needed to be worn. But we've got the detail in the text that says they were nylon scarves. Now, if we're going to do what's right, we're going to have to give some consideration to that. Do we need nylon scarves today? Or was that maybe the most common, the most inexpensive material? So you're dealing with those kinds of details. It's like, for example, if you're going to the job and somebody says, let me show you how to fill out this piece of paper. So you have the guy, he takes the pen out of his pocket, he sits in this particular chair, and he fills out the form. Now he gave you an example. Do you have to get that same pen? Do you have to take that out of the same pocket? Do you have to sit in the same chair? So, you know, we struggle with that a little bit today. When people show us something or they give us a command, we're processing that, and sometimes we have to ask, don't we? Do I need to do that specific? Oh, no, you don't have to do that specific step. That's just the way I've done it. You have some options there. Well, it's also true in the Bible. You know, do we need to do it in the exact same way? If mom or dad taught you how to cook or how to do something in the garage, and he said, this is how to hammer a nail. Well, does the hammer have to be stored in the same spot? You know, do you have to store the nails in the same spot? So this is something that we deal with on a regular basis. Common sense helps us in many ways. Think, too. Here's another one. Jesus talked about the person who gives a cup of cold water to someone. All right. What if you bring lemonade? Do you have that option? Now, somebody might say, well, that's dumb. But that's a question, isn't it? He mentioned water. He says, a cup of cold water. What if we bring warm water? What if we bring hot tea? What if instead of a cup, we were to bring a bowl? So, you know, you have these questions, and I think for the most part, common sense helps us realize what's going on. But it does become, when you start, like I say, trying to look at these things, it does become very, very interesting because it's a matter of interpretation.